Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Will you please welcome your host, Jim Fixed It, for him to have his own interview show. It's Richard Herring. Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as some of the cool kids are calling it now, Rahelestapo. Wow, how many cool kids are in tonight? It's incredible. Last week I tried out doing sort of Peter Kay material. Who remembers that? Do you remember? It was good, wasn't it? Yeah. Heckler preempted my joke, but he hasn't got a microphone. No one knows that he did that at home. So I'll go through the news. There's been good news this week. It's all terrible and fucking news, and it's very hard to do comedy about the news. The Conservatives are doing their party conference, but they're not going to allow the mansion tax, which I can understand because they all live in mansions. They gave a good reason, though, for not having the mansion tax, which was that they were worried about the old ladies who've been living in a house for a long time that suddenly become worth £1 million. So it's good that they're caring. That's why they're not bringing it in. They are in charge of the government. They could just have a thing where they don't have to pay it. That's the reason they don't want to. And there's been a... you see, the Rothko painting has been defaced by... A man wrote his name in the corner. It's no monkey Jesus, is it? That's the thing. That's if you're. It's been set, and the bar has been set with monkey Jesus. Just writing your name in a corner. That can come off as well. They can get rid of that. The thing with the monkey Jesus, there's no way of getting. That was done in such a way. There's no way of getting back to the original. But it's quite a good. Otherwise, it's quite a good publicity thing because if you do that, you're getting the. In the papers, if you just draw on another drawing that someone else has done. I'm not very good at art, so that's kind of quite a good way of me getting in a gallery, is just to paint something I like. It would probably be a cock, I have to admit. But if anyone wants to publicise this podcast, go to a national gallery near you.
Just write RLSTP on any of the... Don't do that. Please don't do that. I'll get into such trouble. And the main news, of course, Jimmy Savile. The thing about Jimmy Savile, right? Everyone's saying, we all knew he was doing it. Why didn't they do anything about it? But I'd never heard those rumours. I'd heard different rumours. I knew about Jimmy Savile that haven't yet come out. And those are the things that people were talking about. When he died, I tweeted, does someone want to check that he's actually dead? He might just have thought of a way of getting into the mortuary for the night. Wake up and they're going, oh, no, I'm fine. Those are the kind of more worrying rumours. Someone tweeted me at the time, how dare you? How dare you mock Jimmy Savile? I'd be interested for you to tweet me again, that person. Tweet me again. About that joke now. It's made it difficult. I do a lot of work for charity. And it's because I care about people. And I can't talk about my charity work that I don't like to talk about in case people think I'm only doing it so that I can get away with all the crimes I've done. Someone graffitied his... It might be the same guy who did the Rothko. He might just be going around. There's a plaque to Jimmy Savile saying he's a DJ and presenter and lover of children. And they put kind of paedophile and rapist on there, but not in the same lettering. I think they should have worked harder. If they knew that he was doing it, maybe they should just not have let him present kids' shows. Don't you think that would have been the... But innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, as far as I'm concerned. ITV does not count as a court of law. Look, we're going to get straight on with our proper show. Got two fantastic guests for you. One of them is best known as the vicar from Mr. Bean's Holiday. You may know him. And the other one was Davy. He's going to be Davy in Henry IV Part 2. That's not a part in it. There's no one called Davy in Shakespeare. They've just tricked him to go along. Yeah, you're playing Davy. Davy? In Henry IV Part 2. Yeah, it's a good part. You will know them better. Steve Pemberton and Reese Shearsmith, ladies and gentlemen. Here they are. Here they are. They're coming in. Well, no, look at that disaster. It's all right. Nothing's going. Come on in. Sit where you like. Whichever. Reese has hurt his back a bit. How's your back, Reese? Is that chair okay for you? We're getting... See if it's all right. He's coming in his anorak.
I've done my back in.
He's hurt his back.
I was in a film recently, last week, and I think I've broken my bottom of my back, but I'm all right. I'm here now, aren't I?
It's amazing what you have to do for the directors these days to get... That's why I've never been in any films.
He was playing Wayne in Richard III.
Is that come out yet? The part of Davy. That's not a real.
It was.
That's not a real character. Do you know? Because I expect you to get a lot of people shouting your catchphrases at you in the street. So after you've done that, have a lot of people been shouting, "There's a dish of leather coats for you" at you. Have they been shouting that at you? That's one of your lines, isn't it?
It was the only line.
Was it? Yeah, I know you had seven or eight. No worse than they are backbiters, sir, for they have marvellous foul linen.
That was cut.
Was it? They can't cut it out of Shakespeare.
Of course you can't. You have to, otherwise who would watch it?
I beseech you, sir. This is my favourite. This is what, if you see him in the street, kids shout, he loves it when you shout this at him in the streets. I beseech you, sir, to countenance William Wowser of Against Clement Perks Over the Hill.
Over the Hill.
Yeah.
I did say that one. Yeah.
Shout that at him, he loves it. And how was Mr. Bean's Holiday for you? For you, how did that... Was that...
It was great fun. I didn't get to go on the holiday, though.
Oh,
I was in rainy London. No, it was directed by Steve Bendelack.
Oh, was it?
Who we both know and worked with.
Yes.
And he directed The League of Gentlemen. And very kindly asked me to go and do a small part in this film. But it was the only thing I've ever worked on where I had my own trailer.
Wow.
Like, you know, you could walk to one end and there's a bed, walk to the other end and there's a fridge. Full proper Winnebago trailer.
Nice.
And didn't tell me about that.
Yeah. Did Davey get a Winnebago? Was there?
No, he didn't.
Little caravan at the back.
I was. I didn't have anything. I was stood in the street. Just got a few looks. Yeah. No. It was. Why are you asking me about Davies?
Because I like to find the most obscure. Because everyone else would ask you boring questions about Papa Lazarus and stuff, and you don't want to talk about that.
No.
No one wants to hear about that, right, do they? So
no one does.
No one does. They're all interested. They're all going to be going out and getting... Is it in that? Because I've just
DVD.
Ordered the set
on
Love Film. I'm going to look out for it.
What, Henry, the Hollow Crown?
The Hollow Crown. I've just ordered it on Love Film.
I'm only in one.
I can't wait. When you're on, I'm going to nudge my wife, go, I know him in real life.
Yeah.
You'd actually be a good Falstaff, I think, Richard.
I never get asked to do anything. I could do Toby Belch in 12
you
Night,
could.
Like that.
You could.
I like a bit of Shakespeare. No one asked me to do acting.
I felt
jokes.
I had to say yes because it was Richard Eyre who directed the musical I just did. Was directing it. He said, "Oh, I've got a part for you." I thought, "Oh God, brilliant! I'm going to be in the Shakespeare." Yes, it's the Davy, and I was like, "Right." Oh, for fuck's sake! I'd just been the lead in this musical. That would be like a proper part. Yes, it was one. But you know, it was an honour to do it, and I'm very proud to be part of it. A lot of people talk about it.
There are Davies, like Davy. We'll never forget Davy now, will we? I've been given a chair on wheels today, which is kind of unusual. I might kind of, this gives a little bit of jeopardy to the front row. I look, I've turned a bit like Davros. I did in the pre warm up. I did talk about it being like Jimmy Savile's chair. Jim will fix it.
You could get things out.
Get little things out of my pocket. Yeah.
Did you ever write to Jim will fix it?
I did. I don't know if I did. You know, I once wrote to Terry Wogan. This is hilarious. When I was 18 and I was unemployed and my year off before going to Oxford University. I wrote and saying it's very hard to get work in the country now. Why don't I come on the Terry Wogan show as like a correspondent who will talk about trying to get work? Because that's what people would really want to see when an 18-year-old Oxford undergraduate who just can't get a summer job complaining about. They never replied. Terry Wogan never replied.
Never replied.
Never replied. I'm not saying he touches kids. There's a conspiracy of science. They're all involved. Anyone who works at the BBC. I don't work at the BBC. That's why. I went in and they said, "Well, are you prepared to touch kids?" And I said, "I would never do that." And they said, "Well, you can't have a job here. It's called the PBC. But you've both got some work coming up at the BBC.
We do. We support them.
Too serious.
No, it's funny talking about those kind of rumours of the television presenters that, you know, we had growing up, because Jimmy Savile, like you say, was almost an open secret and almost like a joke, and now it's become this horrific reality. But I just wonder which other of those kind of rumours is now going to come true. I mean, for years I convinced Rhys that Johnny Morris and Tony Hart were a couple. It was so plausible, and I think he still half believes it.
I do.
And I also remember what I told you. What?
The Queen poos out of her mouth.
No.
He did. The Queen mum poos out of her mouth and bites off the ends of the. And that's why her teeth are that colour. That's what you told me.
That wasn't me.
Wasn't you?
I've only known you since you were 18. You can't have believed that. No, it was when we there's a play by David Mamet called Oliana. Have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. That's good.
And we'd been to see it in the West End, and it's about this lecturer who has this kind of fraught relationship with one of his students. And I said, "Oh, do you know they're doing a touring version of it with Paul Shane and Sue Pollard?" And I said, "I read about it in Time Out." And he goes, "No, I can't believe it." Because we'd seen David Suchet do it in the West End. And,
that's fucking ridiculous. There's fucking actors that could do those parts.
I would have paid to see that, wouldn't you?
I would definitely go to see that. Are they still alive, both of them?
Yes, I've worked with Sue.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was in Benidorm.
Of course she was.
And Paul Shane, my friend Darren, who writes Benidorm, sent me a photograph of Paul Shane in Alicante Airport being pushed along in one of those, special passenger. It's not funny. he's a bit infirm, but he still goes over there to
push
do...
Push along in what?
You know those infirm... Well, wheelchairs.
Right.
Yeah.
Special, but they're not
a special passenger.
Well, they have special ones at airports.
I didn't know about that.
That's for first class passengers sometimes. They just push you around.
Yeah, peanuts added. And then here, there's cashews.
Anyway, the casting is still on. It's still possible. Yeah. They are both with us, yeah.
We can make that happen. That's the power of the Rich Herring.
Rich will fix it for you.
I will. Yeah, Shane Ritchie was going to bring that back, wasn't he? You think they'll...
Yeah.
Shane Ritchie did one episode. I thought it was wrong at the time, but now, comparatively. Yeah. Actually, both of them have squeezed Colleen Nolan's breast, haven't they? That's because there's that picture. Maybe that's the power of getting into Jim Will Fix It. It's in... There's that. Have you seen the Jimmy Savile? I like that. He was so blatant about it. It's unbelievable that no one would... There's a film of him, the Nolans are in, he's up on a balcony with Colleen, who was 15, and he's cuddling her and just basically squeezing her breasts.
Supporting her.
Yeah, but maybe it's the breast that is the power. Anyone who squeezed that can then...
like a hunchback's hump. A lucky hump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't squeezed it, so I can't. What? Why are you looking at me like that for? She's like a woman now. Like you could do now. It'd be all right. So let's... It's awful. Everyone's
they can cut it out.
It's awful. We can cut it out. We're not going to, though. That's the way... So I remember, well, we sort of... crossed paths, I guess, in the Edinburgh Fringe to begin with. I remember seeing the League of Gentlemen. I think the first time I saw the League of Gentlemen, in fact, was at the Canal Cafe, I think after the Edinburgh Fringe, maybe. Would that have been before? When you used to do... It started off with you doing it in dinner jackets and sticking sellotape on your face is my main memory of that.
Yeah,
that was your prosthetics.
Yes, that was the extent of it. We just thought we'd... it was just all about being quick, and that was what we thought we would do, just kind of... very quickly depict a character, and then the tuxedos were the ironical nod to it being kind of like Oxbridge, but being actually not that.
It was just a blank canvas, really, that you could put the characters onto.
Yeah.
But it was funny, we're standing behind this elegant front cloth here and looking at set lists that are pinned to the wall, and you kind of take them back to that kind of feverish time when you would rush off stage and we'd look on the list. What's next? It said Local Shop 2, get this bit of sellotape. Shit, it's all folded in on itself. Like, you're only trying to wrap a present and you need to get somewhere really quickly and it all folds in on itself. So sometimes... there were only one or two occasions I went out as Tubbs and nose, just completely normal. Didn't get a laugh. So we owe all the laughs to the sellotape.
And then you presumably you had to go into the BBC and then did you say, I want to do it with sellotape? And then someone said, no, you have to have this special thing made.
Yeah, I remember it being a big thing that we would leave that... I mean, was there even talk of doing it in tuxedos, filmed?
No.
Right. There was, but... so it was hard to think, well, are we going to just play... What will the audience mind that it's just over and over again, us playing the same three things? That was a worry to us, but it didn't seem to... In the end, it was fine, because the looks were different. But it was a treat and quite scary to think, right, what do they finally look like if we're going to make Pauline look like, what's she going to have? And,
well, it's hard to reimagine them backwards now, just being you guys standing in... I mean, it was that tiny little... Those Edinburgh shows and the...
Because Steve, as Pauline on stage, was just a pair of red-rimmed glasses. I've still got them with chains on. And a clipboard with Pauline written on it. And that, to me, is kind of still Pauline, with your hair and just the glasses. But then suddenly it was this full-on drag character. It was like, oh, my God, this is now Pauline. It's weird.
We had to write Pauline on the clipboard so people didn't think I was just a gay man. A sort of Larry Grayson doing the restart.
Pauline. And I was going to be Pauline, wasn't I?
Originally, you were destined to be
Did
Pauline.
Did I ever do it?
You bottled it.
Last minute said, I think you should do it. I think you'd be better than me doing it.
And a legend was born, ladies and gentlemen.
I think even the other way around, none of it would have worked.
Yes, I agree.
I think everything would have fallen apart.
I did Papa Lazarou in the first sort of sketch version of it, and not in the way that Reese did it. And he was Pauline, and we switched. And it's really inconceivable now that we could have done it that way around. Yeah. Although anyone could go, hello there. Not a huge amount of skill. Hello, Davy.
I did wonder whether that would have happened at all on the set. No one made the connection. And you all met at college in Yorkshire, is that right? I was just talking about you in Pré Manger with my producer, and I've forgotten the name. What was the name of the college?
Bretton Hall.
Bretton Hall. We were mentioning it, and the guy at the next table said, I went there.
Really?
Yeah, we're saying all the famous people who've been there. To be honest, I said it was you and Ian Boldsworth who plays Ray Peacock. There are some other more famous people than Ray Peacock. Yeah. But he went, I went there. I said, are you famous? He said, yeah. He wasn't. He was very upset about Jimmy Savile.
Was he?
Yeah, he was very upset. He was talking to his wife about Jimmy Savile. No. Oh, well, I thought he'd listen to my fucking conversation. I was going to listen to his. we stayed in. So you all met at college? Because you met like when you were teenagers then, 18 or 19.
Yeah.
Or not with Jeremy as well.
Jeremy was at Leeds University in philosophy, wasn't he?
Something
weird. And he was with Gordon, who was the person that kind of put us together as doing things, acting together, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he was Mark's friend. And he left your year, didn't he? Gordon Anderson, who now directs, what was it? Some shit.
Shameless.
Shameless.
Yeah.
Was he in that?
Yeah.
Catherine Tate.
Yeah.
And, is this giving away my opinions of things?
Yeah, it's all right. It's, that's what this is all about.
To be fair, you think everything's shit.
Yes. I've already come down on paedophilia is wrong in this podcast, which is quite a lot of the audience are quite upset about that. Look at him, look how upset old Specky is over there about that. How dare you? I'm not going to sit on the fence over it.
Doesn't agree.
Wrong, I think it's bad. If I ever have to come down on one side, anti.
So we did meet there, yes. That was your question, wasn't it?
Yes, but that's kind of an incredible coming together of very talented... Well, basically, the three of you now are responsible for most television output in the country. So it's incredible that the three of you were in this presumably fairly small
theatrical
college.
They had sort of 30 students in a year, and me and Mark were in the same year, and Reese was in the year below. But we spotted him straight away.
Do they still treat you like you're younger than them and not?
We groomed him.
Because me and Stu were at college and Al Murray was in the year below. And Al Murray had a year off. He's actually older than Stuart. But even now, Stu still treats him like he's in the year below.
I was kind of in awe of Steve and Mark watching their stuff because they were in things. And I used to go and see them and they'd put their own... Because Brenton was shit when we were there. Apparently it got better, but we were... It was good
closed
for the
down,
fact
it?
That it left you. It's closed now, yeah.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, it's fully
yes,
closed.
Yes, yeah, it's closed.
And we did our own things, and because that was the only way of kind of surviving it. When you got there, they warned you of cabin fever, because it was like the Overlook Hotel. It was in the middle of Yorkshire Sculpture Park. Beautiful place, but I didn't really ever recognise it for what it was when I was there. And afterwards I thought, oh yeah, it's really nice. We went back, didn't we? We went back.
Yeah, we went back in our tour bus.
Went back in our massive tour bus. To kind of just gloat, and they were very dismissive of us, weren't they? Would you like us to come back and do a talk about, you know, the fact that we're famous now? And they're like, no, why should we? What about what to do with the cameras? Or it was really kind of slightly...
Yeah, no, genuinely, they're very close-minded. I mean, a lot of these places, educational places, they are just inward-looking. Yes. They're a bit local, and they weren't interested in their students really. Once they left, that was it. That was it. They were over. So,
the training is the more important part. I think it's important. The training, everything that happens after that is unimportant.
In our case, it's the people we met literally, and the fact that you could do other stuff off the course. You didn't have to just do kind of voice exercises and Rudolf Laban physical exercises, and you know you could go off and book a space and put your own play on, either write and devise plays. Which me and Mark and Reese all did, or just stage any, you know, a bit of UNESCO we staged, and you could kind of do whatever you wanted in your own time. The course was something you just had to go through to get those facilities.
But the head of it, drama, was this old man called John Hodgson, who was, and he, I remember the first day, and we always used to quote it, if you three points is ready, diction. This is really true. Deep reported his energy, diction, articulation, and clarity speech. Literally what he said. Diction, articulation, clarity speech. Clarity of speech. Right. And you're teaching us for 3 fucking years.
Almost every production we did there was a disaster in some way or another, wasn't it? We did a production of a play called The National Health by Peter Nichols, which is about the national health of the 1970s, featuring a number of black and Asian characters, obviously, working in the national health as doctors, nurses. And we were an all-white group. There wasn't a single... it's unthinkable now. This is 1986 we started. So they said, they brought in literally the crayons and said, right, you're going to have to black yourselves up.
And Wakefield Opera House.
And in Wakefield Opera House did this production in 1989, not, well, quite a long time ago, but yeah, 20-year-old students blacked up. And so whenever they sort of hugged each other, it was all came off on the white coats of the doctors. So everyone had these brown stains all over their costumes. Horrendous. And then we were bringing a production of, what's that Pinter play, The Room. Yeah, I think it was one of his first plays, which has a black character in it. And me and Mark were both cast as this character. He's blind and black. And we refused to black up. So, you know, it's one thing in Wakefield Opera House, come down to Tufnell Park and do it. Anyway, we refuse, and to this day we regret it because we haven't got any photographs of it. They'd look good in a sort of biography in years to come. But no, we took a stance and said, no, this is ridiculous. And these are the people who were teaching us. I mean, it was disastrous.
Well, it sounds like this is the genesis of nearly all your League of Gentlemen characters here.
Yeah.
And go, we could black up, we could have a rubbish theatre group.
That's it.
So that easy. So well, that is quite interesting. With how did you decide to do the comedy together? Though, is that, did that just kind of happen organically, and then you went to Edinburgh? Because there's obviously a little gap there. Between...
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it's a funny wilderness year, isn't it? When you go on, you did very well, didn't you? Really, doing your own theatre company and working for Variety.
Well, we did. Yeah, we did sort of a fringe theatre company. Me and Gordon, the director Reese was talking about, and you were in the plays. You and Mark were both in plays. But it was, you know, it was hand to mouth, and it was, you know, putting your own shows on. And then we ran out of money. This theatre company needed to fundraiser. So Gordon said, "Why don't you do a comedy night to raise money?" And so we did, and that was the beginnings of the League of Gentlemen. And a lot of those sketches, the Pauline and Jeff and was the local shop? I don't think it was, but a number of the characters we ended up doing were there.
But well, Jeremy did Bernice, didn't he, to begin with?
Yeah.
Because Jeremy was in it, and then we got him booted off it. No, he said, I don't think I can do it, actually. I'm going to let you do it. So he just he decided that... He fell on his sword before he was pushed.
But I think you do... I mean, if we'd gone from being 21 and started to write sketches, what are you going to write about? I mean, it's very difficult, as you know. You need
the more life experience. That's what I did. They were rubbish. We wrote about Rod Hell liking jelly. That's what you end up writing about.
I remember it fondly. Is it available on DVD?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, the second series with Rod Hull in it is coming out very soon.
Good.
If the BBC will ever let us get through without cutting bits out. But let's not talk about that.
We had about sort of 5 years of doing, of really signing on and doing bits and pieces of jobs and... but used that time to write and write and write, and we just built up this massive pile of stuff. And then, like you say, we were at the Canal Cafe Theatre and we did a few regular shows and went to Edinburgh in 1996, and that was the beginning.
It's strange now to think about it, because I was saying this earlier, never had any master plan. I mean, how could you really, but to think, it might eventually be on television. We're just doing it for the thing of doing it, and I think that's the only way you can do it, really, and make it and keep it pure. I know people now that think, well, we'll do a sketch show, we'll get a sketch show together, and then that'll get really famous, and then we'll be able to get parts and other things. It's like totally the wrong way around to think about it. The work. But we were just in it, doing it, and then it was like, oh my God, really? There's a radio thing maybe going to happen, and it was just literally day to day. That's how I remember it anyway. I don't remember a big master plan at all.
No. I mean, you know, no, definitely not.
I think you work very hard. I mean, someone gave me a book, came to my gig in last night and gave me a book they'd written, and it's called Tim, I think, Hello, and it's about comedy on Radio 1. And I think I must have seen this book before, but I don't know, there's a whole chapter about me and Stu's Radio 1 shows from the mid-1990s, and I can't remember anything about it, and it's kind of just full of like all these ideas kind of spilling out. And I think you just got on with it and messed around and then actually just completely forgot. And there's so many things that we forgot about that we wrote and didn't use. But you won the Perrier, and you're the first sketch group to win the Perrier since Stephen Fry Footlights.
Is that
without that, do you think things did it propel you onwards, or was it all happening anyway, do you think?
Well, no, I mean, that actually was in 97, and in 96 was the first year we went with literally our own little photocopied leaflets and standing out in the street, and that was the year.
Did our show, didn't we, and Legs Akimbo's.
Yes, yeah.
We had fly leaves for Legs Akimbo within our show. That was like slightly.
We did some street theatre as Legs Akimbo. We got quite a crowd, and no one knew it was meant to be satirical. I think they would have rather have seen everybody out than seen the League of Gentlemen. But
gather around, come on, guys, gather around.
It was
good. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, we kind of had it in place in from the year before to develop the show into a radio series. And the Perrier just can't. It helps definitely. Yeah. But I think most people who've won it have gone on to do stuff, but not everybody.
No, that's true. So Time Out, the depleted magazine. Sad though, isn't it? It's sort of sad to see this like pamphlet now it is. But they wrote about this show, and it's very nicely. The comedy critic, the consummate comic. That's me, pictured. There I am, pictured. Don't look as old as I do in that other thing. Tonight includes Psychoville creators Reece Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton, who no doubt will be asked questions about their penises. Well, I think I've confounded. I think old Ben Williams at Time Out looks a bit stupid now, doesn't he? Because I've been doing proper interview questions. So, Steve, have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
No, because it's not possible.
It is possible.
Is it? Quite,
well, not for everyone.
No. I couldn't do it now in my fucking life.
We know how that bad back came about. Have you ever tried to suck each other's cocks? That's because there's two of you. Well, and you've known each other so well.
I've felt it. No. Felt Reese's one.
Yeah, have you?
Yeah, I think I have.
On your bum when I was bumming you. Not in real life. That's as Ross and Paulie.
That's actually not the one I was thinking of. No, we did a sort of little, when we did our live show for League of Gentlemen, we had a sort of lesbian routine with Pauline and what was your name? Kathy Carter Smith. And I had to sort of grab your groinal area.
Oh yeah.
So there was padding though.
Yeah.
So I don't know what was padding.
Is the padding always there? Is that just for that?
Yeah, even as a woman I have double layer. That was cut out of the live show, wasn't it? That scene in Dance Number. Was it not?
No, you're thinking of the other one.
Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's the special thing he made you film backstage.
Yeah, that never.
The other one.
The bit where I was, you were actually.
It's a special.
In my, up my bum with your car.
It might be you.
It's for the DVD.
Stuart once tried to wank me off with the ventriloquist dummy in his hand. That's why, you know, so I know that.
When
you
Because
you worked together with the hand of a ventriloquist dummy, but he had to have his own hand around that.
How did you sustain an erection?
Well, I did. I didn't want it to happen. I was crying, and he was trying to cheer me up.
This could be the new scandal.
It is. It should be. I've mentioned this a lot. It'll be dead, and then it'll come out, and everyone go, "Oh, Stuart Lee, the ventriloquist dummy wanking bloke." I was 18 at the time. That's practically. And I mean, you know, it's different. When I was 18, I was, you know, essentially still a child, just because we progress at different rates, don't we? So I think it counts.
Did he speak to you in the voice of the dummy?
He didn't even do that. That would have been entertaining. That would have helped. Didn't even think. You'd like the dummy you'd like, because I know you are. It was a dummy made by my great-granddad out of papier-mâché in the 1880s.
Was it really?
Yeah. We used it in the act, and then he was generally trying to, as people will know here, it's a well-known story. I was upset one night in our first Edinburgh, and he thought that would be a good. It's not the first thing you think to cheers, you know. Maybe tickle them first, see if that works. Don't go straight for the ventriloquist dummy that your great granddad has made. You know, when my great granddad made that hand, he wasn't thinking one day that I'll be on the cock of my great grandson. And the flaccid cock of my crying.
So was he only using his thumb and little finger to do it?
It's like a little papier-mâché hand. It's a little tiny. You'd like it. I should have brought it into shape because you'd love this.
Because
you on Twitter, you at nighttime, you post really scary pictures of ghosts and stuff.
I posted you one particularly, didn't I?
You did.
Why are you doing this? I'm alone in the house. That's why.
I did once, because when I went back to my parents' house once, they'd got the dummies for some reason, and without telling me, they'd put them both sitting underneath the dressing table in the bedroom. So we came into the bedroom, turned the light on, and then these two very scary dummies. So I took a picture of them, but then I took a picture of one of them crawling towards the bed. But so you are very, you're very close. The two of you work together.
Yeah.
Have you had anything like that ever?
No.
One of you been a bit drunk?
No.
Unfortunately,
honestly, we could say no. We get it all out in our work. I mean, Reese has taken me roughly from behind.
Yeah,
when I was Pauline in series 3,
that was experience. Yeah,
it was funny to write it. We're killing ourselves laughing writing it, and they said, "Right, Steve, get in, hitch your skirt up, bend over the sofa. Your dignity is a long way behind you."
It wasn't a closed set or anything. It was everyone just more people came in. Who are these people?
Was that something people really wanted to see?
Yes.
I thought more people would have left. It's not a close. It's not a close set, but no one wants to see it.
Yeah. Close set.
It was very sordid, but then I think that as we were doing it, I was thinking, "Oh God, this feels really not funny." So I managed to kind of push my glasses up my bridge of my nose, and that saved it.
Yeah. He twisted the glasses, and thank God, it's funny again.
Yeah.
But we were talking about stage, because I was going to mention Papa Lazarou actually, but also in the Tina Turner bit in Psychoville, which I
ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Miss Tina Turner
in the hands of a different comedian. And the ventriloquist dummy's hand of a different these could be quite contentious contentious characters. I mean, how did you come up with the idea? I don't know how. A lot of people can go, "Yeah, we saw this morning, and there was an unusual guest on." We thought, "How did Papa Lazarou come about?"
Lazarou came,
and both of them really. But
yeah, well, Lazarou's voice came from our landlord, didn't it? From when we were living in East Finchley, there was a, and he was called Peter Papa Lazarou. Not stretch. Change it much for what happened, but and he'd ring up. I've told this story many times, but he would ring up and he'd, "Hello." I'd not dealt with any of the lease, getting the contracts written for me staying there, so he didn't really know I was even living there. Steve had done it all, so he'd ring up and he'd know Steve was the person that was renting his flat. Say, "Ah, Steve." No, it's Reese. I'm the it's them. No, you want to leave a message? "I want to smell the smell. I got this Hoover belonging to him." I said, "Well, he's not, he can ring back." "This is just a saga now." So it was just that, and I wrote it all down, and we did it, I'll just tell you.
We just sat by our answer machine and wrote it verbatim, I swear to God, and that was it. We put it in and thought, Mark and Jeremy, yeah, when we read this out to them, they'll just sit there and look at us.
It seemed to work. And Jeremy and I had wanted to do something about like a home invasion thing with people that you didn't want coming into your house. He just seemed to fit, and then we put him
gypsies,
into the
circus.
Gypsies,
you can say it.
You can say it, and then
so you blacked up to detract from it being about gypsy. I know a way to deflect attention from an anti-gypsy. Let's black him up,
travelling folk. Yeah, so that's what we did, and then the blackface was part of more like clown makeup. That's what it wasn't not meant. It was meant to be. It wasn't blacking up really.
Well, that's because he was going to be part of a fairground circus. So
yeah,
but it is. I mean, both of those things, they're similar in that they're playing, I guess, with perceptions of. It's almost like the perception of like a 1970s. You know what I mean? It's like a 1970s idea, especially with the Tina Turner routine. It's like that. In the 1970s, you would have been allowed to do
that would have been
among and many other things you're allowed to do in the 1970s. And probably people would have laughed along and thought it was brilliant. And then it's the inappropriateness of it is kind of...
Yes.
But I think...
Do you remember the Brother Lees? The three impressionists who used to stand in a line.
And do the same act.
They used to do an old MacDonald act with different kind of different characters... And one of them, who was it? And they did, was it Louis Armstrong? They did. They put the tights over the head.
Tights on the head, and they had coat hangers with lips on.
Yeah,
and they put them in, and they did that.
But I mean, it was in the '70s. It was, you know, the black and white minstrel show went into the '80s, I think, didn't it? I mean, it kind of stayed of them, which is essentially what that is. And it was just amazingly what you could do on TV. It was sort of astonishing that that was pervaded for so long. But
I think what we kind of, I mean, we don't sit there thinking, oh, this will shock people or this will be naughty to do. I think if the characters are kind of real and you believe that, you know, Maureen as an older lady thought this would be entertaining to her dinner guests,
yeah,
and you play the full horror of it on the faces of the guests, which I think we did do, and then you've got the pathos of the fact that, you know,
he's trying to tell her she's got cancer at the end.
Yeah. So we kind of felt the whole... we honestly didn't get any complaints about it because it was so outlandish and kind of weird and otherworldly that people didn't think... You know,
I think the people who were offended by it just died when they saw it. They saw someone blacked up, then he's got, oh, I've got cancer, and then he's just farted, and oh!
Or they thought, oh, finally, a bit of good old entertainment back on our screen. No, but we've seen a documentary about Blackpool landladies, and one of them, she said, I love doing party nights for my guests. And she went out and she had this pot of gravy browning, I kid you not. She got Bisto out and covered her face and put this big sort of fry wig on. And her guests, and then she came out and did Simply the Best. And it was a documentary all about Blackpool, which David Thewlis narrated. You can see some of it on YouTube. It's a brilliant, brilliant documentary. And that kind of thing goes on in Blackpool today, you know.
So I was going to say, you know, I thought there's no way that you're asking, how do you make this up? It can't be just someone you've met that's like this, but it is something you've genuinely seen.
That was, yeah, completely. And it just seemed to fit for Maureen's character. And it was, you know, that thing of undercutting it with this terrible news that he's trying to impart during
the... But I think also that they, even though they're caricatures and kind of crazy, horrible characters and they're all murderers or whatever in this, there's something very human about them. There's very human about the relationship between those two characters that I think means that is actually... It's not... When you go, you've got cancer, it's funny, but it's also quite hard. It's quite moving that he's trying to tell his mother about this.
That we do try to do that. You know, we try and I think you can make a character as grotesque as you like, but you need to at least in one moment show their humanity and what's troubling them and why they are the way they are, or you know, just some kind of tiny moment that lets you into to see the character as more than just a grotesque. And it annoys me when people say, "Oh, you just, you know, you dress up and put wigs on and sell a tape." I think there is more to it, frankly. Round of applause.
It's like question time.
But I think so.
It's a gentleman in the jumper because you've been hand up a long time.
I think as I was saying this backstage, but I think with League of Gentlemen, because obviously it kind of started as sketches and then you kind of put it together into this world, that sometimes some of them were a bit sketchy and you know, but with Psychoville, it's like it is a created universe. I mean, I think I read somewhere you were talking about the way, you know, some of those characters could be sketch characters. The clown who doesn't like kids, that could be a sketch character. And a midwife who isn't helping people could be a sketch character. Yeah. But then it's more, so you get the familiarity of it coming back every week, but there's more to it because you invest in the story.
Yeah, I mean, that's how we started out. And we thought, could there be a mystery to it? I mean, it was all it was Tangle wanting to unweave what we thought we were going to do with it. To try to create a narrative that would kind of be a cliffhanger ending and do a kind of 24 or a Dexter or thing where you can't wait to watch the next one.
Yeah.
But we didn't quite know where some things were going, but I think we felt that it was good. We'd read somewhere that the Coen brothers were writing Blood Simple, their first film, wrote themselves into kind of corners to have to get out of it in an imaginative way rather than thinking of the end and then working backwards, so which I think is sometimes not helpful.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was going to ask how much you put, because I'm trying to write my sitcom at the moment. It's not going very well. But I just tend to write in order. I want to surprise myself, so I don't work out what's going to happen at the end of an episode. But I was kind of, Psychoville was sort of so kind of seemed so planned and worked out. But
we'd have an arc of a thing. I think that's great, right, to end up there. And other things weren't, were they? I don't think we knew who did it.
We did three episodes about our blackmailer and different blackmail, and we hadn't decided who the blackmailer was going to be. And we hoped in that way we couldn't give any clues out because we didn't decide.
No, I think that's
And then we made it kind of work from halfway through.
But what increasingly annoys fucking fucks me off is people who watch it
And then
just you, yeah, fuckers,
fucking you lot. No, well, my bugbear with the reception to the second series, you can get me really angry now, is nothing's happening. Episode 3 and still nothing's happening. Well, it fucking has. You've been watching things happen. No, but nothing's happening. Nothing's happening. What's happening? There's no story to it. Where's the story? And what surprised me, and Steve, I think, is how much people... The backstory in the bigger picture is something that is there, needs to be there, and probably more there in Psychoville than it was in The League. But it was always a thing to stitch together, basically, the strands of those characters' stories. But people completely... What's the thing of the locket, you know, in Psychoville? And it felt like it hadn't begun until we began that story, which didn't really begin until episode 4.
Right.
And that just really fucked me off, because it was like, oh yeah, it's slow, they don't need a second series, there's nothing happening, they're stretching it out. And it really fucking made me mad. But apart from that, I love it, the people love it, and really grateful.
It's all, the audience are always the problem with everything, I think. If there was just no audience, you could just do what you wanted. Be much better. You're the problem with all entertainment. It's because of you that Peter Kay gets away with doing what he does. I've got to ask you this, Paul Putner. You, specifically. I was looking at you. Paul Putner is in the audience tonight. And he
who
asked,
is he?
Yeah, I think so.
Where is he?
Well, maybe he didn't turn up.
He's not here.
There was a woman screaming in the back. He might just have grabbed.
Ah!
He's killed again. He's the Curious Orange, of course, he's best known as. That is his best known role. But he told me I had to ask, I think it was Reese, I had to ask about Mystic Meg and a hotel room.
Many years ago,
yeah.
I did an episode of, what was it? Lenny Henry Goes to Town. It's on a par with Davey.
It was nearly. It was my second choice to introduce you with. In fact,
was it?
It was.
And I was ended up for some reason in a hotel room in Brighton waiting to film the bit that I had to do with Mystic Meg, who was also doing a sketch and was big at the time. And she, it was a very small hotel room, and she was. We were both sitting, and it was an ensuite toilet. And she went into the toilet, and. All the mysticism. evaporated in this horribly embarrassing noise that resounded around the pan. So I really laughed at it. And then, and it just came out and it was really flustered and embarrassed. It was just. I thought that's...
She didn't try to read your palm after that, did she?
It was embarrassing. And I saw her many years later in Worston's with a pile of books and everyone just walking by her. It was awful. There's nothing funny about that. I mean, but she should have seen it coming. So, yeah, that was horrible, that Mystic Meg, but that was a funny... I got that out of it anyway. Hearing Mystic Meg pump.
Well, she's only a human being. She seems more than a human being, but she is. And I'd forgotten, but I remembered when I looked at your IMDb page that you were in Match Point by the Woody Allen film.
Yes.
One of my least favourite Woody Allen films. The really bad ones he's done recently, and it wasn't your fault.
No, I was hardly in it.
You were... But what was it like being... It's kind of, if I was... You know, if Woody Allen rang me up, which I'm presuming he maybe didn't do, did he ring you up and say, do you want to be in my film, Steve?
Well, I along with a number of other, you know, people...
Mark was in it, was he?
He was, yeah. He was. He was in it but cut out, but right. I think he can be seen in the background. And Mark was played table tennis player too. And if you look it up on IMDb, it says, John. I said, you didn't have a name. You didn't have a character. He said, yes, well, I've got to make it up for IMDb. So John didn't exist. And I went in and kind of, my agent said, look, it's two lines, but it's Woody Allen film, and you've got to go in and do it on tape, that he's not there in the auditions. He watches the tapes afterwards. And I went in, and I think I picked the wrong piece of paper up, because it was quite a long bit of dialogue of a policeman, a detective. And so I did it into the camera, I walked away, and then they said, yeah, you've got the job. But to be honest, I mean, he has made some amazing films.
He definitely has.
Some brilliant films. And one of my favourites is Husbands and Wives, which was the last one he made before he split up with... What's-her-face?
Mia Farrow.
Yeah. And when it all came out. And I think that probably, from that point on... Manhattan Murder Mystery wasn't bad, but then they started to get a bit, you know, not as enjoyable. Anyway.
So there is something good that can come out of it.
Out of what?
Whatever he was doing. That,
why does it all have to come back to that?
It's a theme.
Anyway, so I turned up on set, and he was actually quite rude, and he wasn't very pleasant, and he just sort of said, well, you're the guy, you know, sort of ushered me into place. And then we'd all learned, I mean, I was doing a scene with Colin Salmon and Ewan Bremner, and we all had learned our lines, and, you know, you wait for your cue in this good old British way, and then you say your line, and then they wait for their... And then he sort of said, no, stop. Why are you waiting to speak? People don't wait to speak. You got information. You need to give the information. And I was like, oh, okay. So I just came charging out. And I said, it's drugs. Girl. No. You talked over his line. So I just kind of standing there, and the three of us are looking at each other like, what are we supposed to do? We're in a Woody Allen film. Yeah, that, you know, a big tick on IMDb. But it was actually quite an unpleasant experience. Yeah.
It's a good directing. Do it like it is in my head.
Yes. Exactly.
Do it now.
I think that's how I direct, to be honest. People often say to the pair of us, you know, are you going to direct something that you do? But it's, I mean, when you've written stuff and you're watching other people do it, it is very difficult to tell them how to perform it that is going to be exactly the way you...
Yeah.
And it's, you know...
Yeah, we've been writing this new thing and it's... We know how to do the parts, but there's a lot of parts in this that we're not in. And you do think, oh, God, these are... ruined by people that don't quite know how to do it. But you do have to trust that, of course, you can get people.
But then equally,
to
be fair,
do it better than us.
A lot of people came into Psychoville, were absolutely brilliant and did it really well. So we're not saying we are the two only actors in the world.
No. I mean, yeah, this new thing we've written it, and we didn't even think about parts for us in it when we were writing it. We just thought, what's a good story? And then thought, actually, is there anything for us in it? And there are a few things.
We find ways.
Find ways of getting in, yeah.
So what is it? So it's, at the moment it's called Happy Endings. Is this? No?
It's never called Happy Endings.
Okay.
Why do we call Happy Endings? There's already something called Happy Endings. There's two things already called Happy Endings.
To be fair,
I hope they don't call it Happy Endings. Yeah, we know.
It was announced as being called that. To be fair.
Yeah, it's not your fault.
In a way, I blame whoever put the press release out about it. Which would be you.
anything to do with it. It was all wrong, that information.
No, we can exclusively reveal the title if you want to have a first.
Let's do it.
It's a rubbish title. So someone's leaving.
I don't want to know. No spoilers.
Unbelievable.
No, it's called Number 9.
Number 9?
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have gone with Happy Endings.
The idea is that...
tell them!
The idea is that each week you go to a different house and all the houses are going to be number 9, if it's a big house or a flat or whatever. So they're all completely different stories, self-contained little plays, and they all take place inside number 9. So that's why it's called that.
Number 9.
Yeah. They're all a bit like the episode 4 that we did of Psychoville. We thought we had such fun doing that one that was all... in one room. Not all, that was all one take nearly, or two takes, but this is just, I'm like, our brief in our minds was like Tales of the Unexpected type thing. So they're a little
but
bit
actually
like
unexpected, and not completely expected.
Tales of the, exactly as you worked it out within the minute. All right, so yeah, he's done it, and...
Some of the tales are unexpected, it's quite hard, it's sort of so expected...
It's unexpected.
It's quite hard, It's quite hard to work out what was meant to be unexpected. You're just sort of sitting there waiting for something after.
Is it going to be an extra thing that someone's... Yeah. It was just... It was a snake or whatever it was.
We ran out of...
He turned into a bee. He did just turn into a bee.
Well, that was one of the better ones.
I know. I don't know why we've done this series.
Yeah, we've not copied any of those. No. They're better than that. And they're not, it isn't as prescriptive as, right, and there has to be a twist, because that's, you know, as soon as you hear, there's a twist.
I ending. Hate seeing, like,
the
film
best
posters.
Twist ending ever. It's fucking ruined.
Exactly. I remember seeing, when the, what's it called, the Usual Suspects came out, and they made a huge thing about the ending. So I, someone I know had seen it. I said, don't tell me anything about it. He said, no, I won't. I won't say anything. But it's really clever the way that when it's finished, you kind of want to go back and watch it all again because you don't trust what you've heard. So, okay, whoever's telling the story is going to be telling lies. There, Kaiser Soze, you fucking ruined it. Sorry for anyone who hasn't seen it. But any, you know, any bit of information you give out. So we try to be very sparing in what we give out about anything we do. And it bugs me that people want to know so much information in advance. And I'd love it if a character could die in Coronation Street without anyone knowing about it. Wouldn't that be brilliant? Completely unexpected things. But you don't do it. They use these kind of things to drive people to the show and to build up an audience. And,
yeah.
And especially with like Psychoville, that had most of what was good about it was the surprises, if there were ever any left. So if you knew that was coming, there was nothing to it.
Yeah.
You do have to have some routine. Oh yeah, I knew that was going to happen. So what's the thing of it? And it's like, well, if you didn't know, that would have been a really good, shocking moment. But yeah, it's hard to keep things back, isn't it?
It's hard to keep things back, but also try to promote it, you know, and bring people to it.
Yeah. Well, you've
and we failed on both counts in Psychoville.
What?
We failed on both counts because hardly anyone watched
it. Yeah, no one knows about Psychoville.
Hey, we watched, didn't we?
I know you lot did.
Yeah, we watched it.
That's very kind. People say to me, are you doing any more than League of Gentlemen? No, no, it was 15 years ago. Anything like it? Anything at all remotely like it? Dark? Anything at all like it that you might be doing in the near future or just done or anything like it? We did the Psychoville. What's that? Honestly, that was every day to me.
Every day. And the name Psychoville...
Can you imagine living with that?
I can, yeah. I can imagine living with it and not having a fucking TV show at all. But is it true the name Slices? I read this on the AMD database. I like to call it that twice. that Psychoville was the name that the League of Gentlemen was in Japan and Korea. Is that correct?
That's correct, wow. Yeah. And we tried to find a similar thing for the next series, but we couldn't think of anything because it hasn't been sold to any other countries. But there was a nice link between. In fact, you hated the name, didn't you, to be fair?
Yep.
What we did, we went on, you know, AQA, the sort of text answer providing service, yes. And we texted them and said, "Is Psychoville a good name for a new comedy show on BBC Two?" What was the answer?
It was yes, it is a good name.
So that's how we arrived.
I have to do it then. Shit.
So there's some student out there somewhere.
But I didn't realise they'll answer any question. It doesn't have to be factual. It can be anything at all. So that's how
it's like asking Siri where to bury bodies and things, isn't it? I always do that.
Pardon?
Nothing. that is not relevant.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm going to go to an emergency question because I haven't had to do any. It's been so I've been interested in these guests. So I'm joking. I only have good people on this. I won't ask that one. If you could have, this is good because one of your characters has a false hand. If you could have a hand made of ham, or wait for the rest of the question. That's not the question. Or an armpit that dispenses sun cream. And you had to choose one of those things. Don't answer yet. The ham would regenerate if you ate it, but only slow. It's not like a perpetual hand of ham that you can eat forever. It would take time, but it would grow back. It would work as a hand if you hadn't eaten it. But if you ate it, you wouldn't have a hand for a bit.
Okay.
But then it would grow back and be a fully functional hand. Yeah. I'm just saying you wouldn't have unlimited supply of ham.
Yeah.
You couldn't say, well, I'll open a ham shop. And the sun cream would be restricted to one bottle of sun cream a day. So again, you couldn't set up. It's coming out of your armpit. You get asked all the time, I know, but how, which, if you have any subsidiary questions, do fire them back.
Can you, is it just dribbling out your arm?
No, it's, I imagine it? You would dispense it by your arm like that. There must be some cap on it. So that, you know, just if you were doing a duck impression, it didn't just start coming out. That would be embarrassing. Sort of your shirt was suddenly full of. But yeah, it'd be useful if it was sunny. You could, put it on yourself.
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah. I do. Yes. Why would I ask it? I want you to both to answer.
I would have the hand of ham.
Would you?
Yeah.
Some fans of the ham hand.
Yeah. I don't know why.
I have to agree. I mean, if it was like shower gel or shampoo or something useful.
Yeah.
Maybe
it's a sun cream thing. It's only a month, maybe. That it's useful, and then the rest is just a bind, isn't it? It's just under your arm.
It might build up. You might start to develop sort of a huge shoulder, like sort of Popeye arm, full of sun cream.
Ombre solaire. What kind is it?
Well, I think you'd be able to choose. Rob Delaney did ask a very good question, what factor sun cream would be, because obviously that makes a big difference. I don't really. I haven't thought it through that far.
This has been asked before.
I asked it last week, and I'm going to ask it next week to Peter Serafinovich. I have a feeling I know what he's going to say. Because I did his one last week. It's going out next week. It's very confusing. I keep on not wanting. I can back refer to something that hasn't happened yet.
Very thin? Is it like a wafer thin
ham? Yeah, I think it'd be wafer thin ham rather than like a ham hock.
Oh, he's changing his mind now.
Right, I'm wondering now. No, we'll just stick with a hand.
Feed your kids with it if they're hungry. A little nibble. I don't know whether animals would go, they might go for it and stuff. You're walking down the road, dogs might just start jumping. You'd probably have to have some kind of smell protective glove. I mean, it'd be in a way, both of these things would be a curse. They both sound.
Yeah.
They both sound good.
You wouldn't be able to fly anymore, would you? Because they'd say no liquids.
That's right. Yeah.
Although people piss though, then they're allowed to.
People are allowed to go on planes with liquids inside them.
True, yeah.
But that's one part of the problem, isn't it? Because you could put. That's what I've always. I like thinking up terrorist atrocities.
All right.
And I saw once I was. And this nearly happened. Once I was at an airport and I saw a very large breasted woman going through, like, very voluptuous woman.
So it could be full of
things.
And I
thought if you could just put, like, some of the. Put the stuff that goes in the Oasis bottles inside there. And just have a little prick, they go, oh, bang.
Yeah.
Then that's actually happened. People have tried to do that, and they put them in their pants and their shoes. People have tried to do it in.
But don't people's who've had implants, don't they explode as well?
They do sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
So if you like when you feed paracetamol to pigeons, and their stomachs explode, don't they?
Yeah. Don't give people ideas. Carry on. But you strike me as the kind of people who would be sitting at home thinking up murders and atrocities.
No, we don't at all.
You used to with animals, didn't you?
Oh,
the classic serial killer trope. Burying birds and dogs.
I didn't bury a bird.
Well, I buried a wasp and a bee.
Now, a jar of bees and some worms to see who would win.
Well, they were alive, and you buried them alive.
Yeah, I buried them alive. Yeah, and then I dug them up again, and it was just they were all dead.
You needed some kind of viewing
conclusion.
Don't put stuff in jars underground unless you want it to die. Yes. I thought the worm would have the better shot.
The worm was all bloated like it had been stung many times.
They were in the same jar. I imagined it was so two that... different jars, but you like made
no,
a,
all the same
you made
jar.
A war.
It was all in wrestling with insects.
Yeah, I know. It was cruel. It was cruel. I realise that now.
And are you as obsessed with serial killers as you appear to be? And who is your favourite of the serial killers? Well, with the proviso that what serial killers do is probably bad.
Yeah.
Apart from Dexter.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's hard, isn't it? Conflicting with Dexter. I love it, but... Yeah, anyway, that's another conversation. Serial killers, yes, I was obsessed. I got to pull myself back out of being as obsessed because it was unhealthy. But it was interesting being able to... Because I was going to do David as well, I want to remember that. We were actually going to do the other way around with... I just thought this
Maureen now. And David,
Maureen and David, yeah. It was going to be me, but I thought, yeah, better for Steve to do it. He could do that kind of... better than me. I know you didn't want to play another old woman because you'd done Lomax, that's what it was.
That's
it?
Right, yeah. The old age old makeup started to take its toll so that you could never tell when it'd come off.
Yeah.
But we did a few YouTube videos. There's a few YouTube videos out there of David and Maureen talking to the world, and a lot of people have responded.
Yeah,
not
was,
knowing.
Who is this sick fuck?
You jerk. A lot of Americans. You jerk. Serial killers aren't to be celebrated, you jerk. Because I think this exact conversation we're having now with David and Maureen, and she says, David, who is your favourite serial killer? And who was it? Berkowitz.
Berkowitz. Son of Sam.
Son of Sam. Because a dog told him to do it.
But you didn't like Berkowitz because you thought a dog told him to do it. That's a bit far-fetched.
That was a bit far-fetched. Who was the one who was played by Danny DeVito in the film?
Berkowitz.
Okay. Well, there you go. You should have played David.
Yeah. But then, weirdly, the crossover with you and Whitechapel, you were doing the Ripper thing at the same time, weren't you?
I was,
nearly.
Yes.
Yeah. So you had the Canonical Five.
The Canonical Five. I was doing... I was a Ripperologist in Whitechapel, and I had a book, as my character had written a book all about Jack the Ripper. And if you watch in Psychoville Series 1, when I'm in bed reading a book about Jack the Ripper, it's the one that my character in Whitechapel had actually written. I was reading it under the bed with a torch.
A lot of this comes from... I was in... Remember, is it still there now, down Charing Cross Road, Murder 1? It's horrible. It was all murder books and crime. I don't think it's there now. But I was in there one time.
There was an IRA bomb right outside it that didn't go off in the phone box outside. That would have been ironic, wouldn't it?
Yeah. A book about it.
Yeah.
And I was in there once and a big fella came in with his mum, like literally Maureen and David, and led to the murder, the horrible murder crime bits. I was in there as well, so I can't, not judging. And he grabbed a Ripper book. I want to see the picture of Mary Kelly. And he just sought out that horrible picture of Mary Kelly with her nose off and her hand in her stomach. Not that I know it intimately.
Your curtains are made of that, aren't you?
No, just the print of it over and over.
Yeah, made the print of it not out of Mary Kelly's actual skin. I haven't got a skin and innards that were never found by the. And you gave Chubby Brown some TV work. That's his only TV work.
Yeah, it's funny, Chubby. He was very quiet,
right?
Suspiciously quiet. But he was very nice, and he said, "I said, is there anything you wouldn't joke about, Chubby? I wouldn't make a joke about a lady wiping herself."
Well, that's because there aren't any. Yeah. Does anyone know a joke about a lady wiping herself?
Well, he knows not to go there. Yeah, that was what he said. That was his advice. I wouldn't make a joke about a lady wiping herself. Not nice. No. So, yeah, and he was... he didn't really guess why he was there. He said, someone's told me that I should do it. And he was nice enough, wasn't he?
No, he's very...
It was like Jesus Christ had arrived in Hadfield where we filmed it when he turned up. Everyone running out with their bootleg videos, tapes in those days of Chubby. And he was signing them all away. You know,
and so it was just because you'd named the town after him, it wasn't like
so
a master plan.
Would it be ironical to have Chubby be the mayor himself?
Yes.
So that was
but
it.
He nicked all the street signs. He said, welcome to Royston Vasey.
Of course.
Yeah. He nicked them all.
Yeah, but he was... Yeah, it was nice enough.
I'm going to ask an emergency question.
It's gone quiet.
What
you have to always keep going. Silence is fine.
No, it's not. It's bad. This is. I told you it would happen.
I know.
I told you
surprised.
Just about.
I'm surprised.
You said
I'm
we pushed
still...
through it. I don't know how long we've done. Actually, I forgot to look at.
No,
the
I don't know.
It feels like a long
is
time.
It boring? Are you bored now? Boring.
They'll never get bored. That's the problem. I do a podcast where I play myself at snooker in my basement for half an hour every week. And I'm going to do it. Pardon?
What? Did you just hear balls clicking?
No, I commentate on it myself. That's different characters. And there's no jokes in it. It's just me doing it seriously. and I'm going to keep doing it until no one's listening to it. But people keep listening to it. They'll listen to it.
That'll
anything.
Show them.
It's very exciting. I've got quite into it.
Yeah.
But I'm a bit... Well, it's a bit similar. When you start inhabiting kind of in slightly insane characters, do you worry that will actually... there's an episode of Colditz, which I keep going on about, called Tweedledum, where a man pretends to be mentally ill in order to escape Colditz. But, spoiler alert, he goes mentally ill.
Right. Like Catch-22.
Does that worry you that playing all these...
No, I don't. I think it's healthy that we do it. Otherwise, imagine what I'd be like.
But you see, I mean, you would be a good serial killer because you seem like really normal. You seem like the kind of... You could work in the DHSS and be flushing people down your toilet and pretending it was Kentucky Fried Chicken afterwards. Right, yeah. You seem like that. Whereas you seem quite, you know, like genuinely normal. But you seem slightly...
Do I seem like a victim of...
But that's as frightening as... Because, you know, the really good ones, you don't know, do you? That's the thing. So
that's
I'm a bit scared.
Yeah, they'll never stop.
You come in your anorak, you know, which... is an odd thing to do, even if you've got a bad back. That doesn't... We're
don't
on stage.
Me, I don't think I'm going to be able to get up.
I'm just trying now.
Oh. Okay, I'm all right.
Good, he's up.
Let's have a little walk around.
He's fine. Yeah, but we can stop at any time, or we can just
carry on talking. No, it's fine. It stiffens up a little bit.
This is good. This is one of my regular questions, but it will seem like it's been adapted especially for you. Have you ever seen a ghost?
Oh, good ghosts. Let's talk about these. No.
We did actually go to a haunted house for a Radio 4 documentary, and
this was such a laugh.
Was it called Ram House?
The Ram Inn.
The Ram Inn, which is Gloucester. Even more a carry on.
The Ram Inn.
A carry on title, ghost hunting at the Ram Inn, and it'll put the willies up you. And We got there, and there was this absolutely insane guy who sort of lived there, and it was just a dump, wasn't it? Wasn't an habitable house.
Well, he lived there.
Yeah, like Stigger the Dump. And
he was really funny. He was reputed like 14th century, and it was full of devil worship and child abuse. Once again, we come back to the theme of the night. And... Yes, so we were taken around. We had a medium with us, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a medium, and we did a sort of seance, and she said, I'm going to do a tapping seance. So we did the glass moving, and everyone thought that the other person was moving.
Jeremy
was
frightened. It was really funny.
He is very susceptible to that thing. And one of the questions was, what is death like? And it's spelt out, nice.
That's quite reassuring.
Yeah, nice.
And then sort of friendly, it's all right.
No, I don't know if he did it in this voice. Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
But I imagine it did.
Don't be so scared about it. It's nice. It's
nice
ghost to have around.
And then Mark said, if you were in the 14th century, why aren't you talking to us in Saxon French? and it sort of went F-O. And then we did a tapping thing. So this was not, you know, none of us were doing it. And I was looking, I was sitting next to the medium. I was watching her. Her feet and hands were completely still. She wasn't doing any tapping. There was just the four of us around the room. And that was really creepy because we definitely...
We started hearing it was responding with taps. Not bath taps, natural. And it was like, oh my God, this is... And there was a parapsychologist there as well who was recording it. And he was excited. It was like, we're getting something. Fucking Mark... Gate is doing it. At the end of the night, we went back. I was so excited. I can't believe what has happened tonight. It was me. Are you kidding? That's me. It's ruined.
If the ghost was speaking Saxon French, maybe what is death like? Nice.
Very good.
Yeah.
Don't go there.
Nice is quite nice, but it's kind of all right. There's a biscuit named after it.
But have I seen a ghost? No, I really don't think I have seen a ghost. Oh, no. Fucking hell, I've got a story for you.
Yeah.
The other week, I went to a hotel.
You forgot that you saw a ghost.
Yeah, no. I literally put it from my mind. I was killed by a ghost. Something really happened the other week. We got in free in the BAFTA goodie bag. I know it starts in a strange way. A weekend. Have you been to that hotel yet?
No.
A weekend in this hotel. So I went to this hotel and we went down for dinner on the night. Two wine glasses as there are on tables. And we were just looking at the restaurant, me and my wife. The wine glass just went like that. And I went, huh? And it pushed its way under the menu. Of my wife, she went like that, and we literally both could not believe this wine. I went, ugh! And it just moved across the table by itself, and it wasn't wet. I was thinking, oh, it's aquaplaning, which is the thing that happens with. And it was actually hard to push it, it was like marble. It was really strange. I don't know why. I kind of didn't want to
definitely
think about it because I thought, this is a ghost. But why 8:15 in a restaurant in a hotel?
And then did you get upstairs and Mark Gatiss was there going, it was me!
It was underneath of the magnet.
I'm all ghosts.
I am all ghosts.
That would be a very reassuring thought if all ghosts were Mark Gatiss.
So that was something that I thought, that I can't explain it. But not a cowled figure, never. No.
Have you? No, they don't exist.
Have you?
No.
I have an additional question. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
You mean like a Yeti?
Bigfoot, not a Yeti.
Making a joke about Bigfoot.
They're from a different place for Bigfoot. It has to be. Have you seen in North America a sort of Sasquatch man? No, it's the problem with this question, I find, no one has. But if
imagine one time
it's going to just go bang, it's going to explode. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've never spoken about this before. There was that time I saw a Bigfoot.
Yeah, haven't.
Yeah, it could happen. It's one of my emergency questions. So how'd you get on with Mark Gatiss now? He's doing all Doctor Who and Sherlock and is really successful and owns TV and stuff and doesn't work with you anymore. What is that? Must be awful for you. What's that like?
He does work with us. He was in
Psycho. Shut up, don't stop spoiling it.
We're a bit annoyed because we gave him a nice role in Psychoville and he said, oh, I'll pay you back. And then he did
put us in Sherlock.
He said he did a thing called First Man on the Moon. And me and Reese with the moon and the sun, you know, the George Méliès kind of thing. We just had to just put our heads through a bit of cardboard and have a pie thrown in them. And that was his payback for being in Psychoville. But no, we get on very, very well with Mark and with Jeremy. We're all still very good friends. And we keep on saying there's no reason why we shouldn't do anything together in the future, but we never have done.
We're doing more Horrible Histories.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Which is coming up soon, so that'll be a nice day to get back. It was lovely when we did that, so we rarely get together, the three of us, and even rarer the four of us, isn't it? So we should meet up and think about doing something.
Yeah,
it's hard now because he's got things planned ahead. We've got our trajectory with our things. You have to go, right, we're going to do something from this point, and then that will be our thing and not have something interrupt it. That's why it's hard. But we would love to do something together.
Do you hate him a bit, though? Do you hate him a bit?
Only when he pretends to be ghost.
I'm just trying to. Everyone does that to me, so I just thought I'd do it to you. See how you liked it. Everyone with Stuart. Everyone saying,
it must be awful.
I hate Stuart. I do, but I do hate.
Yeah, but you do hate.
Stuart, to be fair. Yeah.
Good. Well, look, I reckon we've probably done. Do you reckon we've done enough?
We've done everything.
I think we've probably done.
Why don't you throw it open to the audience to ask questions?
We can throw it open to the audience because they'll be stupid. You'll see why. They'll ask fucking. None of them will like make me do stuff from David, from Henry. They'll go, can you do it?
It can't be worse than, have you seen a Sasquatch?
No, that is you'll be dreaming of that question.
What
heat sauce do you have when you go to Nando's? That's my other question.
I've never been to Nando's.
Oh,
see, this is the way you find out whether they're normal people or they've got all starry.
Well, I think you lost them on when I got my BAFTA goodie bag. There was a free night at the hotel.
Not enough you get a BAFTA and you're on TV. They give you a fucking free weekend in a hotel as well if you're successful.
Yeah, it's haunted. That's
it's haunted by me going, why aren't I on TV? When am I going to get a fucking BAFTA? Sorry. Yes, let's throw it open to... anyone got any questions for...
Be hard to see. Them.
Yeah, there's a man there. He looks a bit like a nerd. I think it could be a nerdy... I'll repeat the question after you say it, sir, so people at home can hear.
Okay, how much fun was it for Reese working with Lickenbolt on Catterick?
Oh, how much fun was it working on... I'm going to just edit him out and pretend this is my own question. I've just had a good idea for a question. How much fun was it? It's a bad question because it assumes that it was fun. Right? This is why you're not an interviewer. You don't ask that. You go.
It's a leading question.
Yeah, it is a leading question. I imagine it wasn't much fun. I think Vic and Bob probably aren't that much fun to hang around with. Was it fun?
It was fun. Yes, it was lots of fun.
You were right. It was a lot of fun. That's the answer. That's it. No more. You've answered the question. I'm showing you why.
I can't elaborate.
It was a lot of fun. You could follow. You know, you should in the question. You said, "Can you quantify at least on a scale of 1 to 10 or something?" That's you. So a lot of fun. What does that mean? Who was better?
Better.
Who was better, Vic or Bob? Who's better? What? Who was better, Vic and Bob? Who was more? No, you can't change the question. That's not. I've been sitting here asking brilliant questions about ghosts, Nando's, and other ones before. I've forgotten the early ones.
Ham.
Who was better? Ham was a good question. I've worked on those questions. Who was better? It's like a 3-year-old. What is best? Sunshine or moths?
Do you want me to answer? Yeah.
Who was the most fun to work with out of Vic and Bob?
It's very hard. I mean, Bob was probably more eventually like a real person.
Yeah.
Jim is like, he is like that, quite mad all the time, and you never quite can get past him. I got home last night and I put on the cape and got Nancy to bring me some cheese. And I thought, he did as well. So he's like a bit mad, but he was great. I mean, it didn't seem very long from when I was queuing up in HMV to get their autographs when they were at the height of their 92, whatever it was. And then I was in the back of a car filming with
them. Did you ever queue up to get my autograph in the mid-1990s when I was on TV?
No.
Simon Pegg once queued up to get our autographs for his sister, who was a fan of ours.
Really?
But he didn't really queue up. He just came and said hello. He was working on Steve Coogan's tour even then.
Right.
He hasn't got a sister.
Oh. His sister's called Simon. And Bob said, I told Bob I'd queued up and got their Oscar. He said, was I cunt?
And was he?
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he was very nice.
Anyone got a good question? That was the level of the worst possible question. You can't go. If you go lower than that, I'm going to punch you in the upper arm.
And that's a good way to Soleil will come out.
Yeah. Anyone got a question? I don't really know who they are, do you? I'm not sure. That's why I've. Yeah, what is it? You're better. Right. Hello. I can't see if you're a man or a woman or a human being, but shout it out. Man. It's a long question already. With Psychoval and League of Gentlemen, it seems that...
Once more putting horror into comedy...
This is not a question, this is a fucking essay you've written about. Don't just... Is it going to end disgust? So that's still not a question. One seems to be more about... I'm very rude to my... One seems to be more... I've got to just say to people at home, shut up! One seems to be more about... Shut up! Wait for me to relay the question. With... What's better? What is best? What is better, horror or comedy? You got down to the...
Who would win out of horror or comedy?
Horror would win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we would watch more horror films and horror to inspire us rather than watch other comedies, for example.
Well, I think that's why it doesn't feel like there's a big... I can't really think of any other comedy that you're like. I may be wrong with it. The inspiration seems to me to come from things like Tales That Witness Madness or that sort of those sort of Hammer films from the 1970s, if anything, was maybe the starting point of it. So
yeah, I think
that's it is very funny stuff, but it's not. It's a kind of individual take on comedy.
It's like putting a bee with a worm.
Let's see what happens.
And the worm ends up looking like a sort of. Like it swallowed several bees, and yeah, we just enjoy throwing all those things in, and then if you throw in the kind of pathos and a bit of drama as well, and have a very horrific things, and hopefully some, and we're not afraid to do big gags and big silly slapsticky gags as well. We quite like that. So yeah, just extremes of anything really is good for us.
I'm surprised at how many people find our stuff like unwatchable, and it's it's horrible, I can't bear it, and then others like watch it and. I think it's like Mr. and Mrs. Tiggywinkle, and it's really don't find it horrible at all. So it's just interesting to me that the spectrum is so wide, and it's nothing to some people, and some people they find it really like dark. I looked at it the other night. It was on the clips on some program, and it looked so broad to me. It felt really kind of like not dark. It looked like we were like caricature, like cartoon like characters.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's sort of disturbing, but it's not. I mean, you don't know. There's things will scare some people and other people.
Yeah,
but it's obviously it's clearly comedy. But I think there's a darkness to it. It's about murder and brothers and sisters marrying each other and that's a bit odd, you know.
I think those clips were on the history of light entertainment, so they probably chose things that weren't the extremes of what we do. But that's why we've carried on writing our own stuff and doing our own stuff, because hopefully there isn't anything else too much like it. So
I think this new thing, when we were conscious of the people thinking it's just the same again, or oh yawn yawn, they're doing their dark comedy thing, and we're aware of that and not wanting to. We've never tread water. It's why I get frustrated when people say it's the same again, or they shouldn't have bothered doing another series of that. Because we're fans of it, and we like. And I'd hate to think people think we're lazy or we've written a first draft and not gone back and kind of I do think we try to work hard at it.
Yeah, but you can't listen to these people.
I know. Yes.
But they're people saying that kind of, they're trying to get a reaction out of you. And it's also, it's just an opinion anyway, It's just like if someone's incorrect in this case opinion.
Yeah.
So, but it's that people show, I think often you aren't like a fan because fans are like that. They'll just go, they'll see 1 second and go, it's all the same as before. It's not, they haven't moved on.
Yeah.
Because you love something so much, you kind of, your expectations of it go too high, I think.
Of course. And you can never do what you do and did. Again, because they've got a handle on you slightly, and so it's kind of like, with the second series of Psychoville, we kind of knew, people knew the tone of it and the idea behind, there's always some kind
of... instead of doing this new series, Happy Ending, it's a brilliant Happy Ending that you're doing, why don't you just get one of those fans to write an episode, series of Psychoville and just do what is written by them? I think it'd be brilliant. Yeah. So it'd be worth it for 3 hours having to watch someone else's idea of what the characters would do.
Yeah, that's funny. That people lay claim to how they should do things. Yeah, yeah. He wouldn't do that. Well, I'll fucking be the judge of that. Anyway, yes. So it's funny. You can get eaten up by worried about what you think you're putting out there and how people's reactions to it, but you can't listen to it. It's fatal. I
know it's very hard, but that's what comedy. But that's what comedy is. If you get a tweet, someone going, "I hate that joke in a set or whatever." However hard you try to push it out of your brain, when you get a review, when you get to that joke, there's still a part of your brain going, "Oh God, this is the bit that person said."
Yeah,
shit. Even if everyone or else laughs at it, and so they're very clever. These people, they wheedle into your brains, and that's the way they get power.
That Twitter is.
Yeah,
it's just a big funnel going into your brain that people can pour shit into.
Yeah. It can be. But there's a funnel coming out of my anus that can... and there's a kind of spray attachment on it and it goes to more people and covers them in my own excrement that includes the excrement that has gone through the funnel into my gut and then...
The human centipede.
Yeah. The human funnel squirting thing.
You call the human centipede? Is that what that film is?
Yeah.
Right. Phase two. Complete.
Should do... why don't you do a Psychoville about that, put that in Psychoville, that's just an idea for you. So I tell you, I would like Psychoville, it was good. Can I give you one piece of...
Yeah.
I really liked it, I'm a big fan of it. There's one way it could have been better.
Yeah.
You should have put a Shrek in it. If there was a Shrek in it, it would have been a much better...
What's the thing of you and Shreks?
You've got to put a Shrek
just
in it.
Just put Shreks in
it. Put a Shrek in it. That Betty Blue Eyes, imagine how successful it would have been.
Well... if down the
just
road.
Just a Shrek could come in.
Shrek, yeah.
Instead of a pig.
Still on no.
Well, and the pig. I'm not saying change everything. That'd be insane to take
maybe
the pig out.
A pig, but with a Shrek mask.
It could be both. I saw Shrek 4 this week because I had a child staying at my house.
What? I mean, it's your disgusting one with my... It was this daughter of our friends.
And you still haven't got a television series.
It's terrible. And she was watching Shrek 4. And it's the first time I've seen where someone's taken my advice and they've put a Shrek in it. But they put too many Shreks in it. That's the thing. So it's one... If you watch Shrek 4, there's a lot of Shreks in it.
Is there four?
Well, no, there isn't. There's hundreds because there goes. There's an underground movement of Shreks that are then trying to get back at Rumpelstiltskin or something. I haven't seen any Shrek. First of all, watch Shrek, and then watch Shrek 1, then reimagine Psychoville with a Shrek in it.
Right.
So this is going down a lot better at home than it is in here. with an audience who don't know what I'm talking about. Put a Shrek in it is my advice. If you get stuck, that's what I'm going to do with Rara Rasputin. Put a Shrek in it. It might lead to legal problems.
Put a Shrek in it.
On that bombshell, we got another. Well, let's have one more question. Let's get a good question from. Look at that, straight in now. Someone there. It's a lady, I think, in the fifth row. Yes, blonde lady with the glasses. We've turned into question time. She's laughing now. Yes, I do, madam. Which one do you want? Oh, six of these. Do you adopt your characters? This is like the kind of question I would ask. You can come and do next week's show. I'm not here. Do you adopt your characters in the bedroom?
No.
Do you think anyone would find that? I mean, there were probably people in the audience who might find it sexy, but yeah. I can't imagine your wife would be. Brilliant. Here's Papi Lazaru.
Here's Maureen.
That's got me going.
Right, come on.
No, we don't.
I do a bit of 50 Shades of Pink with Pauline and her Exocet.
The Exocet. What was that from?
I'm not going to say where the Exocet is from, but it's a name given to a pleasure device used by a serial killer's wife.
And Rosemary.
I think it's just let's just end it on Rose West. Rose West.
We've lost them.
Had the Exocet.
She's not. She is a serial killer in home right. Don't put her down.
Okay. Yeah. No.
That's the typical. Typical, isn't it? The female serial killers don't get
recognition.
The recognition that the male ones get. They're just always just wife.
She did win a BAFTA.
Yes. Wasn't there a great?
I said to Dominic West, who won for Fred West.
Yeah.
I can't believe you never thanked Fred. Without whom... Anyway, yes.
It's a good... Which character would you like, the lady who asked that question? This is what David Dimbleby does, isn't it? Which character would you like to have sex with? It seems like you were asking for yourself there. And how much would you be prepared to pay? Tubbs.
And how much?
50p.
12p.
12p.
Should have started lower. I can't believe it. Would you do that?
All the original Tubbs outfit got. Where did you take it? To a charity shop in Muswell Hill.
Yeah, went to Oxfam.
And it was just on a peg in Muswell Hill charity.
And it went for about £20.
The entire outfit.
Why did you do that? You could have auctioned it off for charity.
It was for charity. It's for Oxfam.
We could have auctioned it.
But in Muswell Hill, I don't think people are that
not bothered, are they? No one wanted it. It's where we used to go to get all our dead man's glasses
right.
And wigs and... Yeah,
but we still got the padding, the actual padding, which was I wore for about 5 years. Yeah. And we've still got that with the hump and everything. So,
and the massive merkin.
Yeah.
Vagina.
So leave your name and number at the box office.
We can work it out. Be easy enough to pick up. Well, look, it's been fantastic talking to you. It's been very interesting and illuminating. We've got an exclusive as well, so that's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Will you please give it up for my fantastic guest, Steve Pemberton?
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Next week is Peter Sarafinovich. We're back in a couple of weeks with David Mitchell. All right, goodbye. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Let the Sky Please podcast, or as the cool kids call it, with me, Richard Herring, and my guests, Reese Shearsmith and Steve Pemberton. It was produced by Ben Walker. The music was by Pess. Thank you to Orange Mark and everyone at the British Comedy Guide for all their hard work in getting us to their nerves. It's a Sky Potato and Fuzz production. I hope you enjoyed it. See you next week. Peter Serafinowicz next week. I hope he'll be good. I wonder what he'll be like. How'd you like them Sky Potatoes?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who's said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show. If you enjoyed it, if you want to see me, that'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.